That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
A graphic novel, a TV show. Well, it's not TV, it's HBO. And will this thing succeed? And by how much, man? And some might cheer and some might scoff, because it's Damon Lindelof. But either way, we're off to watch some Watchmen. Watching Watchmen, talking Watchmen, analyzing Watchmen, and maybe arguing over Watchmen.
Who watches the Watchmen? You watched Watchmen a couple of days ago, and now we're going to watch ourselves as we watch some spoilers, watch some theories, watch some comments, and watch each other. And look out for each other is the most important thing. I'm Alex.
Ooh, I'm Justin. So heartfelt.
I'm Pete.
And this is Watchmen Watch. This is our bonus episode 7.5 for an almost religious awe. Another big episode of Watchmen. If you haven't watched it yet, don't listen to this podcast. Go back, listen to the previous one where we recap the whole thing. Also, probably watch the show. That might be important as well.
Yeah, but don't listen to any podcast. Watch the show.
Did you say listen to any podcast?
I said don't listen to any podcast. Swear off podcasts. Go watch your television. The original
that's bad
podcast.
Business. You know what? I'm going to edit out that part. I'll edit out that part later.
You definitely will because you're responsible.
Yes. Nah, I'm going to leave it in. I'm lazy. I am very excited, though, because we do have a guest of this episode. We've had him on our live show in New York before, and I've worked with him a couple of times in different capacities, and he's a cool dude. Josh Wigler, contributing writer for The Hollywood Reporter. He also podcasts on Series Regular, which is Hollywood Reporter's podcast, as well as a ludicrous amount of other podcasts. So thank you for taking time from all of your podcasts to come on our podcast, Josh.
Alex, that gets an almost religious awe out of me to you.
Wow. Dr. Manhattan.
Listen, if that's the case, then baby, we're in fucking trouble. That's no good. You don't want me as Dr. Manhattan, I promise you.
Oh, my God. That last line. I mean, I want to get in and talk about your experiences with the show for a second, Josh, but that last line of the episode has stuck with me all week in a loop head.
And like the blue glow on Regina King, and like you can kind of see his face and her eyes, and just the Reznor and Ross score that's, it's Life on Mars, right? Is lightly playing in the background. It's wonderful. And like for that to already be, we're seven episodes deep and that's a contender for best ending of the series so far. And like, you could say that. I feel like every week it felt like you could say that. This show's it's on fire. It's gone full. It's in a full atomic speed right now, which is appropriate with Dr. Manhattan in the house.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your experiences with the show. So you've been covering it pretty heavily for THR, in between covering multitude of other shows. But I think the last article you did, Watchmen, Damon Lindelof explains that religious reveal. That was your post cap right after the episode, but you did an email interview with Damon Lindelof and got a bunch of interesting information from him. The two things I wanted to point out to kind of get your take on, Josh, just from the interview that you did, one that I thought was kind of fascinating. So I never could pronounce his name right, but Yahya?
Yahya
Abdul-Mateen, and Regina King, they were cast on the show, but they weren't actually told about the Dr. Manhattan reveal until after they were cast.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Top secret. Yeah, I think it was obviously something that the writers knew, certainly something that Damon knew. The way that Damon tells it to me in that interview, it sounds like much like the Hooded Justice idea of Will Reeves' Hooded Justice was pretty central to the premise. It sounds like having Dr. Manhattan as Angela Abar's husband was something that came out in the writer's room pretty quickly. I think that was a pretty early idea. But as far as telling the actors that, I guess, I don't know, tight lid, you know, really, really, really closed circle on making sure that that doesn't get out.
I'm always, and I'm curious to get all of your guys' take on this, but I'm always of two minds about this sort of thing because I understand the secrecy. You don't want it to get out. You don't want to tell 100 actors in an audition, hey, by the way, you're trying out for Dr. Manhattan or anything like that. But it also feels like it doesn't necessarily let you know what you're getting into. Obviously, in this case, it was a net positive. Clearly, Yahya loved it. He put up a hilarious 15-second
video. Yeah, where
he's
just laughing for like...
yeah.
In a taxi, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he hasn't stopped. It's actually...
technically, it's still going on, right? Even if it happened a week ago.
Yes, exactly.
Understanding of space and time.
But what's your take on that? Do you feel like they should put this information up front with their casting people? Do you think they should be more open about it? Or is this the right way to go?
Fuck no. You can't tell actors anything. And like, especially someone auditioning, like not even one of us could be in there and we would not keep it a secret. We'd be whispering it to each other like little kissing cousins.
I don't think Pete would tell anyone. Pete, I think you'd keep that on lock.
That's right, man. I respect the art.
Yeah.
The art of casting?
I will say we're doing this on video over Skype as well as audio, and Pete, there is a little bit of a blue glow on your eyes right now.
Yeah.
I'm sucking up to Pete because I think he might be Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah, good choice.
It'd be a nice touch. No, but I agree with Justin. I do think that, like, you got to kind of be, especially when it comes to comic book stuff like this, where, Watchmen is legendary. So like, we've been thinking about the whole time, but if we knew it would kind of take away from the fun experience. So I think they did it perfectly. So far, I think they've been really doing everything so, so well.
I will say Pete's definitely not Dr. Manhattan because I've smashed his head open and it's just nougat in there.
It's just
a bunch
chocolate.
Of nougat.
It's chocolate.
I think it makes sense. And I think this was also from your interview, but they did a chemistry test together. And to start with the idea of, do these people work together as a couple? Do they have chemistry with each other? And clearly they do on screen the entire time. That's what, in my mind, and part of the reason I've been thinking about that last moment so much, that's why that Dr. Manhattan reveal works, is because it's emotionally based. It's based in the characters. Sure, you have the twist, you have the mystery of all of it, but ultimately it's about, okay, what does it mean for Cal, who we know is now John, but what does it mean for Cal and Angela, not, what? Oh shit, it's Dr. Manhattan. That's the only thing going on.
Right. Yeah, and I think that makes sense to me. You don't need to tell them anything. Like, you can guide them towards that chemistry in the read. Like, I think that you can orchestrate that. You can work there, and then when you've walked away from that and you realize like this is the right pair, this is the right guy, this guy's gonna play really well opposite Regina King. That's when you get to deliver the Dr. Manhattan bombshell. And I'm so sad that we don't have like live footage of that reaction of like how did Yahya take that when he found out who he was actually playing when he was cast is something that I'm desperate to see. I hope that somebody had the wherewithal to record that back in the day.
Plus how cool they played it in the show. Like, they gave us just enough information and just enough scene work for him where we're like, he's a little weird, but also there's so much else going on. So he's a part of the show, but he's just under the radar enough that it pops so much when we get that hammer to the head.
Now, me and Salz were talking about this yesterday. Justin, you called it early of you thought he was Dr. Manhattan early on.
Maybe you're Dr. Manhattan, Justin.
Exactly. I didn't know, but in the episode when she was, touching that globe and we got to see, kind of like the booth stuff, when she clicked away From What's Her Face in the Booth, I was like, oh my God. Now it's all like she knows. And then I was starting to really piece it together, because otherwise she would watch the rest of that to kind of like get information on this detective who's been like busting her balls the whole time.
I do love, and I've heard this from a lot of people who are like, yeah, I figured it out 5 minutes before it happened.
Yeah.
Which yeah, is
not
fine.
Figuring it out. No, it's yeah. not figuring it
I
out.
I figured it out 35 minutes ago.
That's it.
Oh, there we go. There was one other piece of information that I thought was pretty interesting and important for fans to know, because they have been asking so many questions about this. This is your last question. Damon Lindelof pretty definitively confirmed that Dan Dreiberg, Night Owl 2, is not going to show up in the series. Do you believe him? Was he being a tricky mystery boxer? Or what's
Listen,
your take on that?
I am a card-carrying Damon Lindelof apologist, OG, for a very, very long time now. Lost is still my favorite show of all time. Do not at me about this.
Alex are clearly very close.
It's
true.
Alex doesn't even love Lost. He loves specifically the end of Lost.
Yeah, the end of Lost has really grown on me. I did love it at first, but it's really grown on me. But I do think, like, back then, you know, he's a young showrunner. He's carrying the weight of one of the most popular shows in the history of television, certainly modern TV, on his shoulders. I think that he's, like, going out on podcasts and doing interviews and, like, saying shit he should not say. Of like, yeah, we're going to answer it. We got it all. We're going to answer it all. We definitely will. The listeners, it's going to be very satisfying. And then it's not for a lot of people, or there's things that are left on the table and people are frustrated about that. And I think that you don't really have to look much further than The Leftovers. You know, he kind of goes on like a movie quest where he writes a bunch of scripts, and some of them are all right and some of them are not so great. But then when he comes back to TV and he's doing The Leftovers, that show has a little bit of a wobbly start, but then when you get to like episode 5, episode 6, I think it's the classic thing you hear, that show really starts to hit. And all the way through to the end of the line, for me, that's one of the best shows in that I've ever seen. And I think that one of the things that he really started arming himself up with is feeling a little freer to not explain everything and being really open about the fact that, like, yeah, some shit's just not going to get explained. And I think that he's really turned a corner in terms of like not lying to the audience in his meta stuff, in the interviews and the podcasts. Like when I interviewed him before the series even came out and we were talking about the Jeremy Irons character, he's like, you know, by episode 2, we're not ready to tell you who Jeremy Irons is playing other than to say he's exactly who you think he's playing. You know, like he knows that, like, it doesn't matter if you know that Jeremy Irons is Adrian Veidt. What matters is, how is Jeremy Irons going to deliver the line when he says Adrian Veidt? And I think that that is why Watchmen has been as powerful as it was. I think, like, for you, Justin, if you were suspecting that Dr. Manhattan and Cal were the same person, how did that twist land with you? Like, it was probably, I hope anyway, that it was still, like, exciting because of just the way he did it. Yeah.
Oh, exactly. It was amazing. Like, there's no, well, that's what you're saying. Like, he flipped from being super sort of cocky almost during the Lost days to, he's really echoing our stress in all of his interviews where he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I did this right. I just hope you watch it. And we're all like, I don't know if he did it right. I just want to watch it. And it all is just rhyming so nicely. So I'll tolerate the chess match between two gods on a random island on Lost for this show being amazing.
I think it was backgammon or something. It was like Mancala.
Oh, Mancala. What an interesting choice.
Listen, I want to clarify before people get really mad at me. The second to last episode of Lost is not good, but the last episode is good.
You mean Across the Sea is a thumbs down from you, Alex?
Yes, it is. It is.
Technically, it's the third to last episode.
All right.
Ah,
this is great.
Just, just push my glasses right up my nose.
Josh, is that another person? Is that another
show myself out?
He got out nerded.
Before we go on the Dan Dreiberg tip, I think it's too bad that we don't get to see him, especially given so much of the Watchmen pieces they use. It's weird they're just like, forget him, since he's such a big part of the original story. But I don't know if I said this on the show yet, but I do think it leaves a possible season 2 opening to do a Dan Dreiberg in prison season, as you start there and see him involved in a totally unrelated mystery, something where he has to work his way out of a crazy future prison.
I would watch that episode.
Who plays old Dan Dreiberg in that scenario for season two of Watchmen?
Oh, man. Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I think he wants somebody who's like...
Kevin Conroy.
I don't think... I think he wants someone who's like meaty. He needs someone who's like sort of been through too much.
He can put on the weight.
Unless Dreiberg like got a like prison ripped, right? Like he got like prison jacked. Mm-hmm. You could go full leftovers and get Scott Glenn. Like that would be like like prison power Dan Dreiberg.
Or like Danny Trejo.
Yeah, Danny Trejo Dreiberg, as they call him.
Any of these are great ideas. Let's move on. Let's talk about something else that happened in the world of Watchmen today. HBO is always very reticent about their ratings. You know, we find out their broadcast ratings, but so much is focused on streaming, what's happening online, multiple showings of things, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't usually share that. They will share the full numbers at the end of the run after episode 9. They'll probably send out a big press release and be like, here's all the number one things that we hit. But today, as of the taping, we're taping this on a Wednesday, Kate Arthur at Variety tracked down a couple of the numbers. So I'll throw them out at you guys, and you let me know if you have any reactions after we get through this. She said that, according to her sources, there was an average of 7.1 million viewers across all platforms. I assume that means per episode. So that's HBO Go, HBO Now, as well as HBO, any HBO 2 showings, et cetera.
HBO Sometimes, HBO Morning, HBO Evening, HBO Pizza Bagel Time.
That's my favorite time of day.
Yeah. Also, for the initial viewings, I think part of the reason these numbers came out, frankly, is people started to get worried with the sixth episode, which is arguably the best episode, the statement episode. Went down in the ratings for whatever reason. I imagine there was just a lot of things on that night. But regularly it's getting about 800,000 in the broadcast, 1.2 million total for the initial night of viewing, the initial viewing plus 12 hours. And the first episode is up to 9.6 million viewers now, which overall makes it HBO's biggest new show since Big Little Lies, which is great, I think. What's your take
Same
on
audience.
It?
Same audience. All those Big Little Liars.
Yeah, Lori is the Renata of Tulsa.
That is definitely correct.
That's a great step.
That is very easy to map that on. And is Adam Scott the cow of the Monterey? Is he? I don't know.
Yeah, I can see that. He could turn out to be the Dr. Manhattan of Big Little Lies.
People do want to bash his head in from that show, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't like it.
Well, what's your take? Is this good news in terms of these ratings? Do more people need to be watching this? Is it not enough? Is this enough for there to be a season two? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think it definitely is a great sign. And I think that how this ends, more if it ends as well as it's going, I think more people will tune in and those numbers will just go up. But hopefully that kind of I think that's a great statement for HBO taking a kind of a gamble on Watchmen. And, you know, I think it's all pretty good news.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are fantastic numbers, and I think they're going to want to do a season two. The question is, what is season two, and how are they going to pull it off? Because I don't think I would want to see just like a to be continued, and then come back and be like, so get this, now Dr. Manhattan, somebody else. Yeah. Like, guess who he is now? You won't believe it. It's this other guy we've made up. I want to see, like I said, Dan, something like adjacent to this story that still plays in the Watchmen world. And that's why I think leaving Dan Dreiberg out is actually maybe great for that.
And that's what Lindelof has said, right? Like, I think he was the one at Comic-Con that was like, we might not do a season two. Like, we designed this as a done-in-one story that by the time that you get to the end of season one, it should be some measure of satisfying. Couching it in my definition of satisfying is different from many of your definitions of satisfying, so duck and cover appropriately, especially you, Justin. I know, not great. But I think that... Does he have the idea? Does he have the Does he have the drive to do it? Does he hand it off to somebody else? I think those are questions as well. I think that the numbers to me indicate that HBO is down for more Watchmen. Mm-hmm. I think this being, especially for a genre show, for them being as successful as it is with Game of Thrones off the air, and yeah, we've got the prequel coming, but that's still a question mark, especially in a world where like a Game of Thrones pilot gets shot and killed. Literally,
yeah, it's a ways off, and they need to launch something with HBO Max that's going to pull eyeballs in, and it's not going to be one of
those
shows.
That's the thing, yeah. Without getting too wonky about it, that worries me a little bit, and this is an overall worry about the place that HBO is in right now, because Watchmen is actually holding very close to the pattern of a lot of their shows. I often think about, like, The Night Of, that started super small, got a lot of buzz because it was every week, and it just built and built until the end. Same thing with Chernobyl, where it became this Monday night event, or even in the same sort of way, Game of Thrones, though I think that bumped up more between the first season and the second season. And that's what we're seeing here with Watchmen, is everybody's talking about it because it's week to week. It feels like, okay, I guess I have to check this out. Oh, this is good. I'm going to keep watching it. Because HBO Max is coming out, and because that's just, as far as we know, this intense, insane, overwhelming content farm, the new HBO feels like, yeah, do it now. Do all of it now. Let's get it out. And that's not what should happen with the second season of Watchmen.
I think they're still going to pocket the prestige HBO shows. I think will still come out in the same fashion. I don't think they want to damage that brand. It's just going to have a million other things that we may or may not be. It'll be like, watch 10 seasons of this thing that you either it was on in the 90s and you forgot about, or it's a new version of that. Yeah,
we'll see. I hope you're right about that. So that's the ratings. Regardless, good news. Seems to be working well for a giant corporation, AT&T. Let's move on to
season two, episode one. Lube Man slides into the sewer,
yes,
and the camera follows him. Where does he go? 9 episodes.
Hell yeah, dude. Just season two is all Lube Man.
Sliding down that binge. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Slide down Maybe that he binge. Could finally meet the Ninja Turtles. That would be awesome. They haven't
secret
come in
of,
yet.
Secret of the U's. We need to find out.
Secret of the
yes.
Lube. Secret. I know the secret of the Lube.
Yeah.
Let's move on and talk about PDpedia, as we do every week. PDpedia is the back matter that they've been providing online at hbo.com/PDpedia that you check out. There were two things that went up this week. One of them was another memo from Agent Dale Peedy called The Origin Story of Sister Night. And the other one was Calvin Jelani Medical Report, which seems to be, as far as I could tell, the medical report that was filed in Vietnam after Dr. Manhattan in his Cal guys came to and said, oh, I have amnesia. I don't remember anything, before they headed back to Tulsa. Let's talk about the origin story of Sister Night, though, first, which I thought was fun. It talks about the Sister Night movie. We saw the VHS tape in the last episode in the spinner rack that young Angela was looking through. And we find out that Sister Night is actually part of a wave of blaxploitation films that came out in the 70s that were all about superheroes. So you had Sister Night, you had Tarantula, which to me sounds a little bit maybe like a Spider-Man ripoff or something like that. You also had the Black Superman, which PD says was a fun riff on Dr. Manhattan, which is definitely twisting things around. And the most interesting one that they just kind of dropped in there as one of the blaxploitation movies was Batman.
Which interesting.
Is amazing. I love that they keep doing this, that even in the back matter, they're like, yeah, Hooded Justice, by the way, black. Dr. Manhattan, black. Also Batman, black. Just roll with it, everybody. Let's just go. Did you guys check out this material? Anything you took from it in particular?
Well, it's funny how they've couched this as a report for that PD is making that is for Lori, but also on file with the government. And Petey was like, well, I better include a written out theme song from Sister Night, what she does, which is hilarious. And Petey's like, this song's cool.
And like, when is he doing this? When does he have the time to do this? Because if you read the one from the week before, like, it's very clearly like in the immediate universe of what we're dealing with in this episode, in this one that just passed, where like he's being like sent to go places by Lori, and he's like writing about that in last week's PDpedia. And so, like, what? He, like, just, like, went over to Wade's house and found all those dead Rorschachs. And he's like, you know what? I really got to write about Sister Knight. I can't get the nun with the motherfucking gun out of my head. Like, I really just need to pull the car over and just type this one out real quick.
The crazier thing about it, too, is that computers don't exist in the same way in this world. They don't have the internet. So somehow he's writing this stuff out in between everything else that's going on and then getting it over to the FBI. So I don't know. I guess I don't like this show anymore. It doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, wow. Screw you, man. Also, when does he have time to be Lube Man with all this going on?
That's right. Well, maybe that's the thing, right? Like, he's Lube Man, so he's so fast. So he's able to just, like, lube from Wade's house.
He's using the sewers to get all over the town. It's the best way to do it.
Yeah, so he's just, like, lubing straight to a computer terminal. And just, like, he's got these thoughts in his head. And he's just, like, very prolifically, like, pouring them out of his brain. He's like,
when I want to get a lot of writing done, I lube up my hands and computer. And boy,
this is a good writer's tip.
Known fact. Hemingway.
I didn't realize that we
revealed the
tricks of the trade on this podcast.
Yes, no, we are insiders.
The other thing that was kind of interesting that was in here, PD talks about Will Reeves, how Will Reeves owned a movie theater in New York. This is something we found out through, I believe, the last will and testament of Nelson Gardner, a.k.a. Captain Metropolis, that he bequeathed him. Did he bequeath him the theater, or did he just give him the money and say, go to the theater? Was that what happened?
I think he gave him everything, but he said, go to the theater, and that's where you'll be presented to it or something, I think.
Right. Note that Petey mentions is the night that Angela Abar took on the identity of Sister Knight, Will Reeves started showing Sister Knight that midnight every Saturday at his movie theater, which is a very interesting, very weird detail. What do you take away from that, if anything?
I think that means that that Will and Dr. Manhattan have been in touch at multiple points in the timeline.
Cahoots.
Yeah. I think they're a little maybe we'll learn about that. But it just feels like Will knows everything all the time. And how else do you explain that?
Yeah. Anything else about this one before we talk about the medical report?
I hope we get these for like every week going forward forever.
Yeah. Just get a weekly PDpedia. That season two is just, it's all like a text-based adventure game.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Josh? About
I was going to say that with all this emphasis on the movie theater that Will Reeves owns in the PDpedia, and this week with the introduction of the idea of Sister Knight being a film, and with the series having started in the Dreamland in Tulsa with Bass Reeves, I just really hope that the final scene, even if it's like post credits or it's rolling on the credits, is we just get to go to Will Reeves' theater and watch The Nun with the Motherfucking Gun. I think like that would be a really fun way to close the season.
Plus, there's the, you know, kind of like mind control in the movie theater that they kind of like already set up. So that's also kind of crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're going to end with that, where they end up mind-controlling everybody to kill themselves at the end of the season.
Write positive reviews of Sister Knight.
Another very good writing tip is use mesmerization as much as possible to get people to like your stuff. Let's talk about the Calvin
Jelani.
That's
why the Marvel movies are so popular.
Let's talk about the Calvin Jelani medical report.
The money that we get paid.
This one I felt like was pretty simple in terms of what it presents. It kind of gives us information that we already know. There's a funny detail at the end where Cal seems interested in a Dr. Manhattan bobblehead. But was there anything I missed in there? Any details that you thought were particularly fascinating?
Well, in talking about the episode before I read this with other people, some people were saying, was Angela in a relationship with someone named Cal that Dr. Manhattan replaced after he was killed in this accident, or her in this accident? Or did she just start dating Dr. Manhattan or meet Dr. Manhattan and he took on this Cal persona? And I thought that was an interesting different take on it. And this sort of pushes it in the direction that I think Dr. Manhattan met her and then became Cal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my take. I don't know. What do you guys think? Because I think there's two very different things. And I think it plays on the theme of race and in a different way, depending on which one is actually is.
It seemed like from the promo that he became Cal.
Well, that's a thank you for the segue, Pete. Really appreciate it. We could talk about the episode 8 promo. We talked about the name of the episode a little bit in the last episode of the podcast because it still blows my mind that they just put this out there and nobody really picked up on it. But the name of the episode is A God Walks Into a Bar, which is A God Walks Into a Bar, as in Cal Abar, and they just threw it out, and everybody's like, yeah, yeah, it's like a joke. I get it. Which anyway, moving on.
You know, it's no surprise. I mean, this is the show that dropped the line squid pro quo a couple weeks ago. You know, like, you know, a god walks into Abar. Like, that's not a far leap from squid pro quo. Squid pro quo still holds the title, I think.
It's all great. Let's talk about the episode 8 promo. There's a lot of stuff going on here. Other than what we just mentioned, are there any images, Justin or Pete in particular, that jumped out at you that you thought were interesting, fascinating, you had questions about?
It seems like the way they're presenting this, it feels like there's some mask work. It feels like it's going to be a little more theatrical based on this promo, and I thought that was really cool.
I mean, they've been doing such, like, amazing things with the show. I was a little like, oh, I hope it's not, because it's like, you know, he's narrating like, you're going to want to try to save me, but you won't be able to, you know. And, you know, she has been like this whole show going against what people have been telling her and doing it well. So, you know, I was a little like, okay, well, at least this part is still. But it was just, I was so blown away by the bar scene that it was hard for me to kind of then rally to focus on the action stuff, which was kind of crazy for me.
And it's scary when Dr. Manhattan is saying something like that, because he's never wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
That's sort of his deal, is he knows what's up. He like, if that's what he's saying, like, you're going to try to save me, but you can't, then this is not going to have a happy ending. So
yeah, which is,
sucks.
Yeah.
I like Cal. I like Dr. Manhattan. Everyone be cool. Everyone relax.
Yeah.
I agree, though. I do think he is not going to survive. Based on that and the promo and the amount of times they said that he was immortal in the beginning of the last episode, makes me think he's going to die.
It's an intense thing for Damon Lindelof, who's like this huge Watchmen graphic novel disciple, to like come in, do this show that he's very nervous about, and then he just straight up kills Dr. Manhattan. It's like is a very gutsy thing to do that I would not put past him, but it's just like that's a big move. That's a big smack against Alan Moore.
It's the kind of thing that might make you nervous in every interview.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's true.
I mean, I do think, though, it's a smart thing for the longevity of the show, because what he has talked about in a lot of interviews and at panels, and I've heard this quote, him talking about it a lot of times, where he said that bringing in Dr. Manhattan is something that intrinsically changes the series, that, like, it's a bomb. It blows everything up. It raises the stakes exponentially. So if you can also figure out a way to take that off the board permanently, that allows you to do a season 2 without the Dr. Manhattan of it all necessarily hanging over your head the entire time, which I think potentially is a good place for the show to be in.
Yeah, but like once you've delivered that bomb, once you've dropped that bomb, and you diffuse it, you're gonna have to come up with something in season 2 that carries some weight. That's
yeah,
very
because
to that.
It's
like, how do you follow up Dr. Manhattan?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if that actually happens, if he kills Dr. Manhattan, I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to come back for season 2.
Well, you can kill Dr. Manhattan. You don't necessarily have to kill the person. You can kill his powers. You can change him. Like, his whole thing seems like it might be chasing being human. Maybe he starts over as a kid. Maybe he becomes Topher. There's some weirdness with Topher that we haven't quite figured out yet.
Topher Grace?
Yeah, Topher Grace, obviously, is what I'm talking about.
Actually, just to throw it out there, it would explain how he played Venom if he was Dr. Manhattan.
He's been a really underappreciated part of the success of this show, I thought, Topher Grace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. No one talks about him.
Yeah.
Except
for us.
I don't
know why we're not talking about that more.
But that's very interesting, Justin, if, like, you know, because we got to see in the graphic novel and stuff, like, how he got his powers, and they kind of re-showed that. So if they depowered him, that would be kind of amazing.
Yeah, because I think it's the way the Seventh Cavalry talked about, we're going to kill Dr. Manhattan. That feels very blank of them to say, like, it's like, we're going to do this. Here's our evil plan. The plan has to have be more complicated or have different repercussions than we expect. Yeah. And I do think something will happen to irrevocably change Dr. Manhattan.
I say something like that to my wife every day before I go off to work. I'm like, well, going to go kill God today, honey. And she's like, have fun. And then I walk out and I come back and she says, how was it? I'm like, maybe tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, you fail every day.
That every sucks. Day I fail. And every day I go back and fight God.
Wow, man, you've got a fucked up day.
Listen, it pays
it's
well.
It's a lot of pressure you're putting on yourself.
Yeah.
It's a hard time. Just be kind on yourself.
Yeah, I got my day job, got my God-killing job. One of them is working out.
Oh, they're unrelated. Well, you go up to a stranger on the subway, and you're like, are you God? No. Okay, good. Bye.
Yeah, good for
See
you.
See you later. He puts his hammer away.
Yeah. Anything else about the Episode 8 promo before we move on and get to some questions from listeners?
It's just so the ramping up of the episodes has been really amazing. And with each kind of trailer, they really do a good job of giving you like excited about a different aspect of the world and the kind of turns that this show has made. It's really impressive.
Yeah. Let's get to some tweet questions and comments from you all in the listening audience. This is from Daniel Cabral on Twitter. They put everything in front of us, Will being Hooded Justice, Cal as Dr. Manhattan. The giveaway about Cal was Laurie's encounter with him. It seemed they had something. Clearly, they have just not what we expected. What do I know? It's only a tweet that will never be remembered. Wow, what a sad
God.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Come on, man.
Wow. It's not going to kill God with that
podcast that's going to live somewhere.
Yeah, this podcast is going to live forever.
That tweet is immortal. That's immortal. It's going to live forever.
You should pin that tweet. I think it should be at the top of your Twitter.
Yeah, I don't know why you're starting with that tweet. We should have ended with that tweet.
Jesus. No, you started at the beginning in case people tune out because they're like, now I got to go find this tweet and pin it to my own account somehow.
We should smash that tweet open and see what's inside.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good idea. We were talking about this on the recap a little bit, and Josh, I don't know if you have any takes on it, but one of the things that I love about the show is that they really did lay out every part of the mystery, and you could pick it up, you could figure it out if you wanted to, but...
Only if you're really smart. Really smart do you call it.
Otherwise you get it 5 minutes beforehand.
Exactly.
But, yeah. But no, they lay out absolutely everything. The Hooded Justice thing was all there. The Dr. Manhattan thing was all there, and it all makes sense. But like we were saying earlier, I don't feel like figuring it out in either case takes away from the show. It only adds to it.
Yeah, totally. It doesn't matter. Like what matters is watching Will Reeves, you know, fight crime in the alleyway for the first time. And watching the delivery of those story beats, I think like just the art behind that, like even if you had the inclination, and a lot of people did from the first episode, even it's like, oh, well, they keep talking about that Hooded Justice show. This is probably going to connect these guys. I think it works out with the delivery. I think with the Dr. Manhattan stuff and how like there was so much on the board and what can you go back and like look at as far as Cal. One thing that I had been looking at back in episode 3 was that piece of pop art on the wall in Laurie's apartment in that first scene. Because you see very clearly the Ozymandias illustration looks like Jeremy Irons, and the Silk Spectre one looks like Gene Smart. And Dan Dreiberg, he just has the huge mask on, so he doesn't really look like anybody. I was really trying to see, like, does Dr. Manhattan look like anybody in this cast? And I couldn't figure it out. And bad on me, I wasn't thinking about Cal. But if you go back and you look, it's like, oh, that kind of looks like Yaya a little bit. Like
I think he does look like. I think it's perfectly done because he looks enough like him where you're like, oh, it's right there. It's been right there the whole time.
It really is. Really smart.
Yeah, they showed it to us. This is from John George on Twitter. This touches on a pretty popular theory that I've seen in the past week in particular. So there were the dead bodies of Phillips and Crookshanks that Veidt put out on Europa, spelled out a couple of letters, a couple of words. All we got to see was Save Me D. A lot of the popular theories have been Save Me Dan Dreiberg, which I don't think makes a lot of sense. Save Me Dr. Manhattan, which does make a little more sense. The latest one that John says is Save Me Daughter. Specifically, the theory there is as Lady True dropped this very big sort of like dangling sentence of her father is going to be there soon, a lot of people started to suspect that perhaps, in fact, Lady True's father is Adrian Veidt. What do you think about that theory?
Yeah, I've been really operating under the idea that she was connected to the comedian's time in Vietnam and linked to Dr. Manhattan in that way. If Dr. Manhattan had felt remorseful about the way that everything went down with that scene from the comics and maybe took a, you know, special attention to you know, fixing that mistake. But they kind of shine a light on that a little bit in the PDpedia from last week, I think it was, where they have like that Lady True article and talking about like, is she the comedian's daughter? And I feel like that's not on there that early if that's the direction they're going. I think that I like the Ozymandias idea. One thing that I've seen making the rounds recently, and I'm going to forget to credit a couple of the people who've tweeted this my way, is that the bust of Adrian Veidt that we see in Lady True's arboreum. I don't know.
Vivarium.
Vivarium. Sorry, I am not smart. I have not figured things out.
That's close. I wouldn't discredit saying arboretum instead of vivarium.
There's people who think that that's like it's like Han in carbonite or Horatio Sands in carbonite, if you prefer. And it's Adrian Veidt is in the statue. And we know that like the timing is probably a little bit off. And earlier in that episode, something rockets onto the Clark farm. Is that Veidt coming back? And is he like encased in some sort of bullshit? And he's in the vivarium.
I mean, that would be, I've heard a lot of people saying that too. That would be so weird.
But this show is so weird.
Definitely. I mean, it is. And so maybe that is what it is. He's just going to crack open and be like, ha-ha.
Like an egg. I mean, there's so many eggs that he's just going to hatch.
That's a good parallel.
I think it's save me, doctor, you giant blue dickhead. I think that's what it spells out.
Yeah. Save me, dudes.
We don't know how many Phillips save and Crookshanks are there, so it could have been a very long message. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Save me, dad hamburger that you haven't finished and some French fries, please.
If you ate that while I was gone, he'd be so mad.
We'll definitely see. We touched on this a little bit the last episode, but I do feel like based on the fact that we know that Lady True cloned her own mother and is putting her mother's memories inside of her, if Adrian Veidt were her father, it would almost make sense to not have Jeremy Irons there, but have a child version of Adrian Veidt that she had taken from the genetic material from that statue or something like that. And so we'll see two young kids together and she'll say, these are my parents.
Right. Well, a great way for season two to have like, if Jeremy Irons doesn't want to do this again, you could still have your Ozymandias honey cake and eat it too and have Adrian Jr., AJ Veidt.
Now, to me, though, like, what's the nefarious plan about cloning, having child parents? Like, it's just, again, it's like, what are you doing? Why?
It's a power
well,
shift.
No,
it's, a power
it's very therapeutic because you get to boss them around. You
yeah,
know
exactly.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, interesting. So you think this is like a child fantasy? I'm like, haha, you got to eat your vegetables, dad.
Yeah, how do you like it? You can't get up from the table till you've cleaned your plate.
Ozymandias.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, this all tracks. Let's move on to another one. This is from Dan Weston, says several thoughts. They are using Laurie as bait for Dr. Manhattan. I think Veidt is linked to Keen, as there is a clear scene dissolved between them in episode 3. Another link with Veidt is that Keen gets Laurie involved, knowing that they will be using her later. Veidt loves a plan. Looking Glass will reappear amongst the 7th Cavalry. He took one of their masks. Still, one question, what happened to Judge Shu when he was hung? So just to deal with the last two first, because I think those are the easiest. The Judge Shoe thing, I don't think you're necessarily supposed to think about that being missing. We talked about that, but that's a clear visual reference to when Rorschach gets dragged off in the comic book. He only has one shoe on. So I really think that's all they were going for there personally. And I definitely agree that Looking Glass 100% took one of the Calvary masks. He's undercover there right now, and hopefully is going to fuck ship up.
They're going to, Wade's going to reclaim Rorschach. Right,
yeah.
Like if Rorschach's been appropriated, then Wade's gonna take him back. But I hope he doesn't give up the mirror mask, because the mirror mask.
Oh, it's so cool!
It's very cool.
What about this other stuff with Laurie as bait for Dr. Manhattan, Veidt being linked to Keen, Veidt loving a plan, all of that stuff? What's your take on that?
If they think Laurie is going to work as bait for Dr. Manhattan, they haven't been keeping up with his dating profile.
Yeah, he does not. He's over it. He's on to a younger woman. That's his whole move.
Talk to Jeannie or whatever her name was. I forget. Yeah. But.
If anything, I think it's probably more about making Laurie watch what they're doing and potentially winning her or trying to win her over to their side in some way, because that seems to be a lot of what Keen is doing. Is he's charming everybody. He wants everybody to be following him and agreeing with him. So I could see that more versus, Dr. Manhattan is going to try to save Laurie in some way.
I don't know. That seems... Because he's such a, like, his whole thing is being a white supremacist. You think he thinks he's going to be like, these people are definitely going to get on board with a white supremacy if I just tell them about it. Like, that seems a little.
I don't know. That's kind of his mode so far, I feel like.
Yeah, but he has people under. I mean, I think with Looking Glass, it makes sense because it's not about, hey, come be racist with us. It's, hey, here's the truth that you've been haunted by your entire life. And I think that does affect him. But Laurie doesn't care about any of that. She already knows
she doesn't care about anything.
Yeah, so I don't know. I feel like it could also be that she just stumbled in there and now they just have her and can't release her. It feels, I don't know if his whole plan has been this the whole time.
Laurie's gonna grab a Rorschach mask and put it on and step into the Dr. Manhattan device machine and become Dr. Manhattan, and she's gonna be Rorschach, Dr. Manhattan, and Silk Spectre at the same time.
Wow.
She's
all
awesome. On the series regular podcast we've been doing, we've been like lightly speculating somewhere in that area, because that would just be like the most sacrilegious thing they could do by the end of the show.
Yeah, then she's also the comedian, because she's both Silk Spectre and the comedian.
Right, exactly. You have to figure out the Ozymandias piece.
Yeah, if it ended with her getting all of their quote unquote powers and being like, no, call me Watch Woman.
Yeah,
that would be the absolute worst thing that could happen ever.
No, I think she steps through the machine and comes out with a long gray beard and says, I'm Alan Moore. Watch out. And I approve of this show.
I love it. I've been watching it all along and it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's what it said. It said, save me, Dave Gibbons.
Yeah, oh, nice.
That's good. I like that one. This is from Martin on Twitter. He says, as an avid follower, I'd be ecstatic if you can mention my theory, which I have already shared with you before. Is the theory on Reddit that Cal is Dr. Manhattan? Martin, I want to throw it out there. I think you're right. I think Cal is Dr. Manhattan.
I think he might be onto something.
Yeah, so check that out on Reddit. But he does also say a few other random ideas. The elephant seems to be a trauma-collecting vessel of sorts. It seems likely now that Veidt is True's dad. We touched on that a little bit. But what do you think about the elephant? One note that I'll make, Justin and I were talking about this. We couldn't figure this out. And when somebody pointed it out to me, I felt dumb. The Lady True logo is an elephant. It's the bottom of the T is the trunk of the elephant. There's two tusks coming off. The top of the T is the two ears of the elephant. So that's what's going on here. But what's all the stuff with elephants? Why is there an elephant in her headquarters? Why is that all going on?
The great Antonio Mazzaro, my co-host on the podcast, likes to say the elephant never forgets. The elephant has such a long memory. So you could just you could throw all your bullshit on an elephant. Which is kind of, I guess, not a surprise. HBO has some track with this stuff, right? There was the whole
final
Westworld kerfuffle.
I mean, she ran into the room and there was literally an elephant in the room. You know what I mean? That's
oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Josh, I thought you were making a joke about all the horses that died on luck and they had a track record.
Well,
with
that wasn't great either. That was pretty bad, too.
Yes.
Yeah. None of their animal work has been that outstanding. I mean, to the point about what you're saying, like, maybe Cal isn't Dr. Manhattan, and he just had some blue stuff in his brain.
It's possible.
Some random blue, like...
Blue raspberry Slurpees. Mm-hmm. Over yeah, the course exactly. Of his time in Tulsa.
He had brain freeze, and he was drinking a Slurpee, yeah.
Yeah. Baby, we're in fucking trouble. You got brain freeze.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, it seems like that's kind of what happened, no?
Yeah. This is the last one that we have, and then we'll start wrapping this up here. Tracy Todd on Twitter says, do you think any of Rorschach's siblings are as ill-adjusted from their tough upbringing as he is? Will they play a part in the Watchmen story? Also, why do you think Dr. Manhattan came back to Earth? Why Vietnam? Do you think there's any real hope of Seventh Cavalry killing the living god, Doc Manhattan, who literally reconstructed himself back together atom by atom? Lots of stuff there. I have never heard that Rorschach siblings thing before. What do you think about that? I don't think they're going to play in it anyway, but that's a fascinating detail to bring up.
Rorschach's twin is going to be a game changer in season two.
Yeah. That would be wild. That'd be a wild turn of events. Since we already have like a ton of Rorschachs, it'd be like, yeah, well, here's another Rorschach. You didn't see that coming.
You thought that guy was, those people were messed up. Check
that would
out
blow
this
me
guy.
Away. That would blow me away. That'd be crazy.
Well, what about the other ones? Why do you think Dr. Manhattan came back to Earth? Why Vietnam? And do you think there is any way the 7th Cavalry could ever actually kill Dr. Manhattan?
It'd be a really shitty way to kill Dr. Manhattan is if he's killed by a bunch of white supremacists. That's going to suck. Like, I feel like I don't think it's going to end well for Dr. Manhattan. But Antonio and I have been talking on the podcast. Like, it's going to be like, he's going to make that call himself. Like this, like mm-hmm. this is on him. Like, he's like, yeah, this is good. Like I've been around way too long. I'm fine to give myself up for some greater cause, some power play that's going to take out the 7th Cavalry. But like, these are the guys that are going to take on Dr. Manhattan. Stop it. No.
Yeah. I kind of just feel like he was lonely. Like he did a bunch of stuff on Mars and then, you know, needed some love.
Yeah. I think he wants to recapture his humanity, and maybe the way, like we sort of said before, the way that they kill him is he commits to being human and sort of finishes his mm-hmm. cycle going from man to God and then back to man in that way. And then it's about the last episode or the climax about them finding a way to beat the Dr. White supremacists.
Yeah, I do think a large part of it is we don't know what the Millennium Clock does yet. We don't know what Lady True's thing is yet. And I feel like now that we know what the 7th Cavalry's plan is, that's bad. But again, we were talking about this a little bit, Justin and I, on the last episode of the podcast. My feeling is what the 7th Cavalry is doing is the equivalent of Russia and the United States about to go to nuclear war in Watchmen. But whatever Lady True is doing is what Adrian Veidt was doing with the squid. And that's ultimately the insane, horrific, fucked up thing that happens that saves the world, but also ends up killing 3 million people. So if something's going to take out Dr. Manhattan, I don't, to all of your points, I don't think it's what the 7th Cavalry is doing. I think it's ultimately what Lady True is doing. And I do think, based on her actions and everything that she talked about in the Globe Room last episode, that she's not particularly fond of God or Dr. Manhattan, and I don't think she sees a use for him in particular.
Yeah, and especially she's on the side of Veidt, and Veidt was trying to control Dr. Manhattan. So I think she's trying to pick up where he left off. I was thinking about this because Alex had a theory that we talked about before that she's going to give everyone Dr. Manhattan's powers or somehow power up a large section of humanity. I thought that was a cool idea. But so much of this...
That's like the syndrome plot, right? Like once everybody's special, no one will be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
She does wear a cape, which doesn't point to good things.
It doesn't
for
bode
her.
Well. That's bad. Stay away from jet turbines.
That'd be a wild homage to touch on randomly at the end. But I was thinking,
Topher
what if
is the Jack of the Watchmen universe? Anyway, sorry,
that's
Justin.
Topher.
Can we stop?
That's
never. Is Frozone Lube Man then?
I mean, it fits. It tracks. But I was thinking so much of this show has been about, like, memory and how memory sort of is bad for you. She talks about how nostalgia is actually such a scourge because everyone goes back and relives all of their trauma. Like, what if her plan is to erase everyone's memories and then nostalgia becomes this high-in-demand thing where you can recapture your memories or the memories that she selects for you to try to make a better world?
Everybody is Lady True's mom by the end of the season.
Yeah, but I mean, that would make sense why the mom is a thing, because if she can reconstruct a personality, she can say, hey, I'm going to go through and fix people. And that is sort of like Veidt's plan. It's like, it's good to fix things, but it's also an erasure of free will.
Right.
So I think that could play in. That maps us to a certain number of things that are on the table, I think.
I mean, to throw something else on that theory, and I do think that's kind of interesting, wasn't it Lady True who says to Angela that, wow, total amnesia, that's very rare and kind of only in soap operas?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So her throwing that out there, that potentially does point to her saying, oh, yeah, but I'm also going to do that to everybody. I do think this is something we talked about a couple of episodes back. I think it was when Jordan was on, that this is absolutely the wrong phrase, but if the idea here, if what Adrian Veidt was doing was trying to solve for nuclear annihilation and figure out a way to stave that off, potentially what Lady True is trying to do is solve for racism, to figure out a way to eliminate racism. And I do think one way is to wipe everybody's mind. Another way potentially is to go the other way and deal with one of the other big things we're dealing with, which is give everybody the same trauma, make everybody feel the Tulsa massacre, send those memories out to absolutely everybody. So everybody understands, oh yes, through empathy, this is what everybody went through.
I don't know. It's a hard time being a white man in America, Senator Keene, like, you know, boom. Millennial clock. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. I think maybe the clock is just a giant TV antenna and everybody gets to watch soap operas for free.
Mm.
That'd be good.
Okay. Yeah. She did in one of the PDPD things that didn't.
Yeah.
For free. Well,
wow. I know. My soap opera budget is out of control. I spent a fortune on those fuckers.
Just printing money.
Great. Thank you all for writing in your questions. Josh, before we wrap up, plug some of your stuff. Where should people check you out?
I'm on the Twitter bots. I'm at Round Howard. That is how you can find me there. I tweet out the links to my things when I remember to, but often I forget. So if you want to seek out the podcasts, it's Series Regular is the name of the podcast I do at The Hollywood Reporter, where we do show-focused podcasts. Right now we're all in on Watchmen. That's wrapping up, obviously, very soon. And I host that with Antonio Mazzaro, who is fantastic. He and I also co-host a Mr. Robot podcast that we do over at Post Show Recaps. And that show is about to wrap up. That's been phenomenal, the final season. Zalvin, I slid into your DMs the other week. I was like, oh my fuck, God. What just happened?
It's so good.
Much to discuss.
So good.
And I also I do a weekly Lost rewatch podcast. I'll try to win you back
now
over, you haters. Come to my dojo. It's Down the Hatch is the name of the podcast. It's a Lost rewatch podcast I do with Mike Bloom. We're going episode by episode, week by week. Every episode is like 2.5-3 hours. We really go at it. It's very fun. It's a lot of listening to do. I think you might enjoy it if you ever watch Lost. If you've never watched Lost, definitely never listen to it. It is full tilt spoilers all the way through. Those are the things. That's the stuff.
Awesome. Definitely check out all of that. Thank you, Josh, so much for being here. A couple of things to plug on our end before we go. If you want to follow us socially, Twitter, Watchmen Watch 1. We are Watchmen Watch Podcast on both Instagram and Facebook. Very sporadically putting things up there. So mostly the Twitter. Follow us. What were you going to say,
and
Justin?
Feel free to slide or lube into our DMs at any time, which is a term that I think we need to get out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, you can check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. We do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York that's totally free. Come on by. We will chat with you about Watchmen. If you want us to support this show and other shows that we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. For as low as $2 a month, that helps us support doing this and all of our other podcasts. And you get some nice bonuses. We have Patreon slash back. This has been very active talking about Watchmen, and we would love to hang out with you all day and talk about Lube Man or whatever you want to discuss. You can subscribe and comment on iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. And remember, we taped this podcast 35 minutes ago.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today. That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.